Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.
Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly. Hey everybody, welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise. I hope you guys are having a good week so far. It is officially fall here in California. It is so windy today and so cold. It definitely like feels like a crisp fall day, which I can't even believe that it's already like, you know, well into November. I just don't understand where the year went. But anyways, I hope you guys are all having a good week. Today's episode is headline highlights. As you know, we have so much to go over. I mean, unfortunately, there are a lot of new cases that we need to talk about, but there's also some crazy updates in some other cases. And they're one of the cases, actually, I'll just tell you now, that we're going to talk about is the Micah Miller case, because there's been some updates just within that situation of itself. There was an FBI raid, and there's just a lot we need to talk about. Also, before we get started, I just want to let you guys know, we did do a restock, finally, of the safety kits. If you remember, we sold out of those two or three times, I believe it was, and we've been waiting on the restock. We finally got it. I would imagine they're going to go quickly again, but you can get those at annieelise.com, whether you're getting it for yourself, for a gift, whatever it is you want to do. And we also threw up a couple leftover pieces of the exclusive tour merch. So even if you weren't able to make one of the live shows, you can now grab a piece of the merch, but once it's gone, it's gone. But we do have the exclusive like rock tour tee up, also the crime shows and comfy clothes sweatshirt. So again, once it's gone for good this time for not only the tour stuff, but also the safety kits. So grab it now. It's all at annieelise.com. Now let's get into our first case of today, because this one, I don't even know what to really say and how to tee this up, because this first case that we're going to cover is just absolutely disgusting. Like, I am talking scum of the earth type of disgusting. 35-year-old Carl Skuman is a registered attorney in South Africa, and he is being accused of buying a 13-year-old girl and using her as a sex slave, which we hear about crazy stuff all the time, right? But in this situation, a 35-year-old man buying a 13-year-old girl, a literal child. And the allegations are saying that this man repeatedly raped her daily, just beyond evil. And to make matters worse, take a guess as to who facilitated the sale. This creep bought this young girl. Somebody was facilitating that sale. Somebody had to say, you know, hey, you can purchase this. And guess who that was? It was none other than the girl's very own mother. It is truly sick. And look, in my world of covering true crime, I have uncovered some pretty vile human beings, especially parents, I'll be honest, who will do anything for money. And it seems as though this is just another one of those instances where this mother wanted money so bad, didn't care about her daughter at all, that she literally sold her to a 35-year-old man. So this all started back in September of 2022, and the 38-year-old mother apparently went on in a different adult website. And we all know what adult websites I'm talking about, ones that posted advertisements for sexual services and things like that. Although she wasn't posting for herself, she was posting all of these sexual services from her daughter. And the websites were said to include Sex Trader and Red Velvet. Sex Trader is kind of literally what it sounds like, almost like Auto Trader for cars, but it's literally sex. So she was apparently making these listings as though they were coming from her daughter. Just sick. And I cannot wrap my head around any of this because it truly is despicable. This 13-year-old's mom was essentially pimping her out. And she also had another daughter who was just 11 years old. So she's a mother of two. It is just disgusting. So anyway, that September, Carl made his very first booking with the 13-year-old little girl. And then for the next few months, he started making more bookings. Then in December, he asked the mother if he could, quote, buy the 13-year-old girl. And that is when the mother agreed. So he offered her about 160,000 rand, which equates to a little less than $10,000 US dollars. And Carl made a down payment and gave this mom a car, which she could use in addition to the payment that he was going to make, just trying to solidify this deal. And that's really all it took. It was as simple as that. And this mother sold her daughter, knowing what his intentions were, knowing what he was going to do with her daughter, all for a little under 10 grand plus a car. It is sick, which I just can't imagine the state of this poor 13-year-old girl because, I mean, imagine being sold to a monster by one of the people and the one person, arguably, who is meant to love and protect you. So Carl buys this girl, and as I said, he allegedly would repeatedly rape her, daily. He would do it in a guest house or even in the mother's house, and if the 13-year-old ever tried to refuse, he would up the ante, so to speak, and he would point a gun at her and he would threaten her. Also, he allegedly filmed what he was doing to her every single time. He kept this little girl locked inside a room with no food, no water, and he even sometimes would force her to clean for him, which it really does illustrate once again how insane it is and what people are capable of doing to children. So, as all of this is now starting to unravel, it was confirmed that Carl is a registered attorney under CBS Attorneys, and his Facebook profile said that he also owned the legal practice. But apparently, not only is he like this terrible human being, but he's also a pretty lousy attorney. He currently has 3 active complaints against him. The complaints are failure to account, failure to attend to a matter diligently, and also has engaged in actions that have damaged his reputation, which, obviously, hello, I think that's pretty clear. So last Wednesday, Carl appeared in court and he pleaded not guilty to all of the charges. However, he is charged on 26 counts, including 4 counts of rape, exploitation, kidnapping, human trafficking, and child abuse. He was granted bail of 30,000 rand, which is about 1,700 US dollars. This was after he was arrested back in 2023. And all I can really say is, this guy was willing to pay 160,000 rand to buy this little girl in the first place, yet his bail was only set at 30,000 rand. It just makes no sense to me. Like, how can a man like this even be granted bail, right? Now let's also talk about the mother, because she also pleaded not guilty to all of the charges against her. As of right now, she has been charged on 72 counts. These include sexual exploitation of children, child abuse, rape, human trafficking, kidnapping, and creating child pornography. And luckily, she is currently still in custody. Now, this woman must have been some kind of evil because she allegedly forced both of her young daughters to have sex with multiple people in the guest houses, all in exchange for money. Then she would also force them to see, quote, multiple clients per day, which obviously you can't even call them clients because they're not choosing to do this sex work willingly. It's adults, it's minors, it's definitely not a client relationship. It is just disgusting. And these people are absolutely sick. So these 2 young girls were sexually assaulted multiple times per day, all arranged by their mother. The mother also allegedly didn't register her second daughter with the Department of Home Affairs when she gave birth. And she could have not registered her to kind of keep her little business all the more secret. Who really knows? I don't know how all of that works because, again, it's a different country, different circumstances, but who knows? Now, the names of the mother and the young girls have not been released, but this case has me absolutely sick to my stomach because imagine all the people guilty, all the people who raped and assaulted these young girls, these kids. They were just absolutely failed by the one person who was supposed to protect them. The trial is set to resume this week, so definitely check back for more updates because I'm going to try to keep my eye on this. I just want to know what the truth really is here. How many people were truly involved? Will more information come to the surface? It's just extremely unnerving. Now, let's shift over a little bit. This is a newer case. It's definitely a breaking case, but it is one that we talked about. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but we did talk about this case, and there has been an update. So Remember, if you've been listening, there was a murder that originally was thought to be a bear attack because of how gruesome it was, because of how, you know, diabolical the situation was and the crime scene. But then as they investigated it, they realized that it was just a very barbaric homicide. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go back two episodes and you'll get fully caught up. But anyway, a suspect has allegedly confessed now to the murder of Dustin Jersom, the one who was murdered, and again, it was thought to initially be a bear attack. However, this suspect who confessed claimed that it was all self-defense. Now, as a reminder, Dustin's body was found on the morning of October 12th by his girlfriend and another friend when he didn't show up for plans from the previous day. He was found, quite literally, mutilated in his tent, and it was originally thought to be a bear attack because of how wild the crime scene was. So after wildlife services found no trace of bears in the area and an autopsy was conducted, it became clear that this was, you know, no work of a bear. And Dustin was said to have died from multiple chop wounds. That is a direct quote, multiple chop wounds, not my words. So 2 weeks after the murder, the authorities released an update saying that they were looking for missing items that were taken from the crime scene. And in a social media post, the county sheriff's office asked the public to look out for a large blue and silver axe, also a shotgun, and an orange cooler. The post went on to say, quote, "If you see these items, don't touch them and immediately report them." They also said that leads were being investigated. So now that brings us to the arrest. And 41-year-old Darren Abbey was arrested just last week on October 26th, and he has been charged with the murder of Dustin. And you'll never believe this, but this murder was apparently the result of an absolute chance encounter. See, Darren was also said to have plans to be in the Moose Creek campsite that weekend. And when he got there, he found that Dustin's campsite had already been set up. Dustin's setup had a wall tent, beds, and even a stove. And get this, Dustin, the murder victim, also allegedly invited Darren into his campsite so that they could, like, crack open a beer together.
As he approached the site, he realized someone was staying there. He stated Dustin welcomed him to the campsite and offered him a beer. At some point, this individual struck Dustin Jersom with a piece of solid wood, stabbed him in the neck with a screwdriver, and ultimately hit him with the axe.
And I just have to say, one of the most eerie parts about this is the fact that Dustin just unknowingly welcomed his killer into his campsite. Originally, it was said that Dustin was meeting up with a friend, but he was actually spending the weekend with his girlfriend. So he got out into the woods a day early on Thursday to set everything up, and he was supposed to pick her up the next night. When he never showed, that's when the girlfriend, along with the other friend, went out looking for him. And then the next morning, unfortunately, is when they found his body. Now, Darren has been employed in Big Sky at different times, and he was arrested in Butte, which is about 130 miles from Big Sky. And he was actually taken into custody by police on October 26th for a probation violation. So, this Darren guy has actually had quite a number of run-ins with the law already, too. Just take a listen.
Battery on a police officer, burglary, also found guilty at trial. He had multiple charges of aggravated assault on a peace officer, malicious harassment charge. He spent time in the Idaho State Penitentiary. He has multiple DUIs across multiple states.
I mean, he definitely racked up a criminal record. There was also a profile that matched Darren on the Montana Department of Corrections website, and the profile showed that he was originally from California and has several tattoos. The tattoos also included swastikas. So he was taken into custody on the 26th, and then 3 days later on the 29th, he was interviewed and he reportedly confessed to the murder. But again, he was claiming that he did it all in self-defense. After the murder, Darren also admitted to taking those missing items from the crime scene, which had his fingerprints all over them. And also, remember how I said before how the two men, you know, cracked open a beer together? Well, yeah, that can was found at the campsite, and the DNA on the can was confirmed to be Darren's. The next day, Darren allegedly came back to the campsite because he said he forgot his hat, and that's when he took more things from the scene. He stole binoculars, a headlamp, and also two phones. He washed the clothing that he had been wearing that night, and then he burned the shoes that he was wearing on a wood stove, all to try to dispose of evidence. Which, I gotta say, you're claiming self-defense, but then there's all of this evidence of you trying to cover it up. I don't really know. So he appeared in court on November 1st, which was just last week, and he was charged with one count of deliberate homicide and two counts of tampering with evidence. Now, because of the brutality of the murder, along with his very serious criminal record, the judge set his bail at $1.5 million. His next hearing is set for later this month in, I think exactly it's November 15th, but don't quote me, it could be a day or two, give or take. But when you step back and think about it, it just is heartbreaking for Dustin's family and loved ones because he was a loving father, he was well known in the community, he had friends, a girlfriend, he just had a happy life. He was inviting this person into his tent to have a beer, to enjoy camp life, all of these things. So I hope now that there's some more answers that can bring some sort of peace to his loved ones, but nothing can make up for such a brutal crime like this. But I do hope that the community is healing and sticking together through it. Now, going from camping to glamping, well, not really glamping, but like from one end of the spectrum to the other, from camping to like super high-end, ritzy, fancy spa, I want to talk about this Hamptons luxury spa murder that went down because I might do a deep dive into this case. There's something here and I can't quite put my finger on it, but something doesn't feel right. But let me just get into it because this case takes place at an upscale spa and hotel in the Hamptons, which just saying that makes it sound like a pretty luxurious place, right? Oh, it's an upscale spa in the Hamptons, but that's not even scratching the surface. This was like ultra chic, ultra private, yet a horrific murder went down. So 33-year-old Sabina Rosas was found murdered in her room at Shosuji Ban House in Watermill, Long Island. This is the Hamptons. Now, she was found murdered in her room. However, Sabina didn't check in alone. She checked in on Sunday, October 27th, but she was alongside a 56-year-old man named Thomas Gannon. The two of them reportedly checked in, they got massages, she got a facial, and they relaxed a little bit. But all of a sudden the next morning, he left the fancy glitzy resort, and he left by himself. He called an Uber to drive him all the way back home to Pennsylvania, which is 220 miles away. Then, around noon, an employee went inside their hotel room, and that's when she found the body of Sabina. Now, authorities still haven't said exactly how Sabina was killed. They only said that she was killed in a, quote, act of violence. And the murder weapon, or exactly how it happened, was never released. But then, the day after that, after, you know, his 220-mile Uber ride, Thomas committed suicide by shooting himself in the head. However, before he killed himself, he actually confessed to the murder. He sent a message to a family member just minutes before taking his own life, and he admitted to what he had done. However, it hasn't been said what the message said or which family member he sent it to, so it's a little bit unclear what the details are. But of course, this had everybody wondering, okay, who is Sabina? What was her story? Well, first off, she moved to the U.S. at 17 years old. She moved all by herself as well, and she did this to study art. She became a very well-known and respected artist in the community, especially in New York City. Anyone who knew her said that she was just this extremely passionate and talented artist.
She was a force of energy, like no one you've ever met. She was so engaging, magnetic.
She was known to not really stay anywhere too long either. She was traveling around the world to work on different projects, participate in different art festivals, all sorts of things. And she had actually just won her first artistic residency, and she was set to move to Portugal later this month. And because of that, over the summer, she started a GoFundMe page asking for money as a birthday gift. And the top donor on the site was none other than Thomas. He posted on the page, quote, "You have an amazing gift, and soon all the world will see. I love you." Now, this is all coming from the guy who allegedly went on to murder her. Now, another thing, was Thomas definitely referred to Sabina as his girlfriend, but to Sabina's close inner circle, Thomas was more so seen as a sugar daddy. Thomas would travel around with Sabina, he would fund her art projects, and most of her friends saw him as, you know, a loose word, you know what I'm talking about, like a investor, but not really, you kind of get where I'm going, more of like a sugar daddy. Her friends also noticed his aggressive behavior, and so much so that they told her a few times that she needed to get rid of him.
He was here for dinner twice, and he had money, and he wanted to help her, and he wanted to be with her all the time.
What kind of a feeling did you get from that?
Well, we both had the creeps.
It was more like a benefactor relationship. The benefactor just really got too obsessed with the artist.
So he saw her as a girlfriend. Her friends saw him as a, quote, benefactor. I mean, it kind of sounds like it was bound to get messy, right? And as if this web wasn't already tangled enough, it actually turns out that Sabina was engaged to another man. Writer Iwata was the voice you heard in that audio before, and he was reportedly her best friend, as well as her fiancé. So she had this fiancé, as well as some sort of relationship with Thomas.
Murder out of passion, because this person who took her life didn't want to share her with anybody. She was probably the most undiscovered and underrated artist of our generation.
Now, a lot of people are suggesting, as I mentioned, that Thomas was the sugar daddy and she was just a sugar baby. And then he felt like he was losing control of her, that she was going to be moving away. And people also refer to it saying that she was his muse and that he just became obsessed with her and that he didn't want to let her go. And that that's what must have caused this crime of passion. He murdered her and then he fled. However, there's other people who are saying, no, he knew about the fiance. He knew what the situation was. He knew what the arrangement was. So there wouldn't be any reason for him to freak out the way he did. That's why I said, I feel like there's more to this story here. And look, I'll be honest. I have a few friends of mine, actually, who have done sex work in the past or who currently are escorts. And they are in serious long-term relationships. Some of them even have children. And it's not very uncommon that the partner is aware of these things. For example, one of my friends who is an escort is in a very long-term committed relationship. She goes on all these extravagant trips all the time with different women to, you know, kind of be the arm candy with all these different men. And her partner knows about this. It's not a secret. So I don't think that it necessarily means anything that Ryder, her fiance, knew about the dynamic and that there was anything shady in that regard. But I wonder how much Thomas truly knew. I just feel like there's something more and I can't quite get a grasp on it. So that's why I was saying I might do a deep dive on this, but I don't know. Now, we still have to go through the updates with Micah Miller because there was an FBI raid, as I mentioned at the top of this episode. There's also a new case where a daughter is accused of killing her mom with a chainsaw and then literally barbecuing her remains. I mean, there's quite a bit more that we need to talk about. However, if you can tell, I'm a little bit sick, so I'm going to grab some water. I will be right back and we'll go through everything else.
Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.
Okay, so now let's get into the updates regarding Micah Miller.
Robinson County 911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, are you able to trace the location of my phone?
Tell me what's happened.
I'm about to kill myself, and I just want my family to know where to find me.
Okay, ma'am. Just listen to what I'm saying, okay? Let me make sure I got the exact location where you're at, okay? Just 1 minute.
So 30-year-old Micah Miller died by suicide on April 27th in North Carolina. And in a bit of a twist, several months later, which nobody really saw coming, her husband's home was raided by the FBI. Now, going back to Micah, Micah was found in a state park after she had shot and killed herself. However, even though her death was confirmed as suicide, there has still been a lot of speculation and people suggesting foul play. Leading up to Micah's death, she and her husband, John Paul Miller, were going through a separation, and it was pretty toxic, pretty tumultuous. And in fact, she shot herself just days after filing for divorce. And police documents also showed that Micah had been scared for her life at the time. She even shared this video to her social media right before her death.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that I'm alive and well, and life's been kind of crazy. the couple past weeks, months, years. But I've kind of had to keep my circle really small for the past couple weeks just because I'm going through a lot and it's hard and it's my cross to bear. It's the thing that God has put in my life to deal with, and I don't want to bring a lot of people into it.
So ever since then, friends and family have been speaking out to try and get justice for Micah. They've also been accusing JP of abuse, and they accused him of using tracking devices on Micah, which made her scared and made her paranoid, saying he's the one that basically facilitated this suicide. He drove her to suicide because of his controlling ways, all of these things. However, he denied all and any accusations of abuse.
Did you ever physically abuse Micah?
Never once in any way, shape, or form. Not in any type of abuse, not physical, no type of abuse ever. I took better care of her than any man could have possibly taken care of her in every way. She never had to cook a single meal. She never had to clean, not one time. She never had to work. All she had to do was take her medicine and enjoy her life. And I did everything I could to protect her from the abusive people who were trying to stop her from taking her medicine. And I hired the private eye to tell me if she would go near a gun store. That was the purpose. I said, can y'all track her and just tell me if she goes near a gun store? And they said, well, we can't track her for that reason. We can tell if she goes near a gun store, but we have to have something that's like, you know, a divorce going on or something. I said, well, I guess we're getting a divorce. No, I filed for a divorce before that.
Micah's family has been trying to get the coercive control bill passed, calling it the Micah Bill. It's an act meant to protect victims of domestic violence. However, when John was asked why he thought the family was doing all of this and why they were accusing him, he responded by saying, quote, they want money and fame. They will do anything for money. Which, I gotta just say, this guy has been grimy from the jump, and I've done some deep dives over on my YouTube about this whole case and circumstance, and he has a very long history of being grimy. He, I believe, started grooming Micah when she was just 13 years old in the church. I believe he's had multiple affairs. I can't, again, it's not top of mind because it's been several months now, but I will link the deep dive in the show notes for you so that you can get fully caught up on this. I think we did a podcast episode of it too, so I will link that in the show notes, but this guy is like filth in my opinion. So anyway, that brings us to now, and the FBI raided his home last Friday. The search warrant hasn't been made public yet. However, it is fascinating and it has a lot of people talking because, I mean, for a search warrant to even be executed, there has to be reasonable grounds and evidence. So I do wonder what was taken into custody or what evidence they were looking for. I think it's more not tied to Micah. I think it's more financially driven because there was a lot of speculation that he was hiding money from the church, that he was doing some shady things financially. And I think that that's what this probably is more so about. However, as you can imagine, everybody's speculating, right? And they're wondering, could it be tied to Micah? Could it be tied to her death? However, the county sheriff's office did say that there is currently no evidence connecting John to Micah's death. They said that they are investigating something unrelated to the suicide, but they didn't say anything about the nature of the investigation. So we're just going to have to keep tabs on it and watch it, but it definitely did kind of catapult this case back into the spotlight. Now let's talk about this Looney Tune daughter who is accused of killing her mom with a chainsaw and then putting her remains on the grill. Because this case is truly, truly shocking, but a woman from Maryland has been found guilty of murder, and not just any kind of murder. She allegedly murdered her mother with her own daughter as an accomplice. Now, if that phrase sounds confusing, let me break it down. Basically, 46-year-old Candace Craig is accused of murdering her mother, Margaret Craig. And after the fact, Candace's daughter, Celia, is also pleading guilty to being an accessory to murder. And that's not all. After Candace killed her mother, she ended up keeping her body in storage in like a storage container for a few days. Then, along with the help of her daughter, who was only 19 years old at the time, they tried to get rid of the mother's body and her remains, and they tried to do this by grilling her on a barbecue. It is shocking and disgusting because, first of all, for any daughter to kill her mom and then try to get rid of her remains on a barbecue, it's like, honestly, it's just, if you could see me right now, my eyes are closed. I have my like hands to my temples. I'm shaking my head. It's just like unbelievable. But then you're enlisting your 19-year-old daughter to help dispose of her grandmother's remains on a freaking barbecue. It's crazy. So this past Friday, Candace was found guilty after 8 days of trial. She's found guilty of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and disposing of a body in an unauthorized place. Now, this all happened back in 2023, and her daughter testified that the murder, the whole reason it even happened, was because Margaret found out that her daughter Candace was stealing money from her bank account and also committing credit card fraud. Tale as old as time, right? It's either affairs or money, life insurance, money, affairs. Like, so what? She was stealing money from her mom and committing credit card fraud. And so when her mom caught her and called her out on it, she thought in her head, oh, I better kill you now and I better get my daughter to help me throw you on the grill so we don't get caught. Like, what goes through these people's minds? So the daughter goes on to testify that on May 23rd, 2023, she heard a scream come from the grandmother's room. Candace told her daughter not to go into the bedroom, also allegedly saying that if anything happened to her, her daughter had to be prepared to, quote, look out for her sisters. The very next day, this daughter slash granddaughter found her grandmother's dead body inside a storage bin. A few days later is when they tried to get rid of the remains on the grill. But now, this gets kind of crazy because the mother-daughter duo brought the remains and the grill into the woods behind their house. And when they did, they poured gasoline all over the dead body and then tried to burn it. However, when they did that, the fire started spreading. And because of that, neighbors started coming out. They had water. The fire department came to put the fire out. I mean, these women were somehow able to not let anyone find out what they were actually burning during all of this, which is kind of crazy to me, but like also so stupid. Like now you have, imagine like trying to dispose of a body and you have neighbors coming out trying to help you put the fire out. You have the fire department rolling up. Like, I just can't. But ultimately, obviously their plan didn't work. And because of that, the daughter slash granddaughter said that her mom went online to order an electric chainsaw and that she used that to cut up her mother's dead body. She dismembered her mother and then shoved the remains in plastic garbage bags, keeping all of these garbage bags in the basement. About a week after this happened, police conducted a welfare check because neighbors said that they were worried after they hadn't seen Margaret or heard from her in quite some time. So the police got to the house, and when they did, they immediately found Margaret's remains in the basement. They also found the tools that her daughter Candace had used to dismember her own mother. Now, police say that the clear motive in this case was financially driven. And this is a statement from an attorney on the case.
Caring, loving, compassionate, and understanding woman who was killed, who was asphyxiated by her daughter. And make no mistake, Miss Candace Craig absolutely committed this crime, and she is now being held accountable.
Candace and her daughter's sentencing dates have not been stated yet, but the state attorney's office did say that they are pushing for life in prison for Candace. Which, it's just sick, right? Killing your own mother, your own elderly mother, then using your own daughter to help try and cover it up. It's just so morbid and so disgusting. And kind of just like the case we talked about in the beginning with the mother pimping out her 13-year-old, these people are supposed to be looking out for their family, protecting them, not roping them into their sick, twisted life, right? Now, speaking of roping somebody in to their sick and twisted life, let me talk to you about this next case. Because unfortunately, the one I just talked about was not the last case that we have today of families failing people who are supposed to be their loved ones. The parents and brother of a teen girl with disabilities who happened to die from neglect were just convicted of murder, and they were sentenced to long prison terms in South Carolina. Also, let me just add that the older brother was living with her as a registered, paid caretaker. And it gets worse once you hear the state of Heather's living conditions, the daughter who died from neglect, the teen daughter. So let me kind of rewind a little bit. Heather Baynard was 14 years old, and she was severely disabled. She had epilepsy, she had cerebral palsy, she also had suffered a stroke when she was in utero, she had the brain development of a 3-month-old little girl, and truly had a very tough life. She was brought to a hospital in 2022 after she was found unresponsive in her home. Then, unfortunately, she passed away at the hospital. But after her death, their home was searched, and what was found was truly shocking. Now, first of all, there were 40 animals living inside the house. 40. That in and of itself is insane to me. The house was also disgusting. I mean, thrashed. There was urine and feces everywhere. There was trash piling up to the ceiling. It was flea infested. It was disgusting. And it wasn't just fleas. There were roaches. There were maggots. There were flies. I mean, it makes me want to vomit just talking about it. And police even had to wear safety suits just to enter the home. It was sick. Now, these horrific and disgusting and gross conditions of the house ultimately made Heather's skin break down and rot, quite literally. One of the witnesses from the hospital even described Heather's legs as looking like, quote, raw meat. The coroner on the case also said that this was the absolute worst case of child neglect that he had ever seen. It's devastating, it's disgusting, it's cruel, it's unacceptable. This poor girl had no way of protecting herself or speaking up for herself. She relied on her family, and this is what they did to her. Investigators also said that Heather's parents canceled all of her doctor's appointments during that last year of her life, which, how could you cancel all of somebody's doctor's appointments for someone so medically dependent? The whole thing is honestly just beyond me, and it's so heartbreaking for Heather. And you know what it reminds me a lot of? Gosh, I can't remember the exact name. It was probably a year and a half ago now, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. But there was a case that was very similar where the parents neglected their disabled daughter and she literally rotted into the couch. Do you guys remember that case where literally she and the cushions and fabric became one because of all of the body secretions, because of all of that? It's so incredibly foul. So going back to Heather and getting justice for her, it was a 4-day trial with it only taking 2 hours for the jury to deliver the guilty verdict.
The suffering that she went through, not for a minute, not for an hour, not for a day, but for weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, if that's not malice, I don't know what is. Malice is malice. It's ill will. It's just total disregard. And I had that little girl in that situation where she can't escape. She's totally dependent on them.
Heather's parents, David and Bobby Joe Baynard, were found guilty of murder, child abuse, and neglect. They were sentenced to life in prison for the murder, and they were sentenced to an additional 30 years for the abuse and neglect charges. Now, the brother, Edward, the supposed caretaker who was getting paid, was her brother, was literally like living with her and had no other job but to take care of her. He let this happen, and he was sentenced to 30 years in prison. He was also found guilty of murder. It's disgusting, and that's one of the things that I will never, ever understand. I don't understand a lot of the stuff I talk about, I'll be quite honest, because, like, my mind can't even compute and go there of how people are capable of such monstrous acts. But when people inflict this kind of stuff on the disabled, the elderly, the youth, and these vulnerable groups, and they inflict this torture, humiliation, ultimately murder, that's a whole other level, I think, than just murdering a peer. Not that that's okay. Obviously, it's not. But you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to murder a like-minded, socially similar peer, but it's a whole different kind of depraved, in my opinion, to target the vulnerable groups, the elderly, the youth, the disabled, and then not only murder them, but put them through torture because they can't, literally because they can't help themselves or because they can't speak up for themselves. It's so disheartening. I think that's the best word. Like, I could go with vile, depraved, all those words. It's just so disheartening. I don't know, guys. I feel like I need to take a break for my mental health. This is just a lot. It's also been a very long 2 weeks for personal reasons, but whatever. I'll talk about that another time. Sorry, I'm rambling now. And again, I'm glad this isn't on video because I'm like holding my neck, trying to massage my neck, like closing my eyes. It's just, I'm going through it. All right. So that's what we have for headline highlights today. Sorry, I didn't mean for that to try to be like an intro to a therapy session there at the end. But that's what we have for headline highlights today. As a reminder, I will be back on the mic every Monday with a deep dive into one singular case. But if you need more true crime content, if you need more content to binge and you want something that doesn't have the ads, doesn't have the interruptions, you need to check out the Friday episodes, because every Friday I drop an exclusive episode of a singular case right here on Apple Podcasts. If you don't listen on Apple, if you listen to it on Spotify or iHeart, you can get access to that same episode through Patreon. You don't have to listen on Apple, but I drop an ad-free episode every single Friday. So right now, if you sign up for that, you unlock over 60 bonus episodes. So again, if you feel like you need more content to binge, you could do that. And just to give you a little bit of an example, the episode we're releasing tomorrow is a current case that's going on right now. And it's about a TikToker who was super famous and people were kind of watching him unravel as he was posting videos. Then he was convicted of this truly horrific murder where he was seen on CCTV footage and people were trying to figure out the connections and all these things. It's kind of complicated, but it's like a TikToker who had over 4 million people and just kind of went off the deep end. So there was a lot of questions, but we go through them together in that episode and I break down the whole case. So that releases tomorrow, so you can get access either on Apple Podcasts or on Patreon, which I will link in the show notes, but it's patreon.com/AnnieElise. And that's all I got. All right, I'm going to go take a break. I'm going to close my eyes and like chant or do something to just like get back in the right frame of mind. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. I hope you're having a good week. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I appreciate you being here with me and I will talk with you very, very soon. All right, until Monday or until Friday, stay safe, be nice, don't kill people, just get a divorce, don't cheat, just be a good human. All right, bye guys.
Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.